You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, March 29th, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Russia vows to reduce its attacks in northern Ukraine. Ceasefire talks seemingly making progress. U.S. COVID deaths under 800 daily for the first time in months. Meanwhile, Judiciary Committee vote on Ketanji Brown Jackson's nomination set for April 4th. Biden administration releases a budget proposal including a 7% boost in domestic spending and a ridiculous 10% boost for defense. Meanwhile, that same Biden budget includes a minimum rate of tax and a wealth tax on wealth that exceeds $100 million per family. DOJ supports antitrust legislation that would implement a platform neutrality for companies like Amazon and Apple. Classes resume today in Minneapolis after teachers approve a contract and end their strike. Meanwhile, thousands of Sacramento teachers still on strike, one that started last week. Governor DeSantis signs a Don't Say Gay bill in Florida. It is now the law in Florida. White House logs sent to the January 6th committee have a 7-hour gap. Sorry. Don't know how that happened. This, while a federal judge yesterday says Trump most likely committed crimes, federal crimes over the 2002 election. And the House Oversight Committee is having hearings on universal health coverage as we speak. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. Joining me as always, Emma Vigeland is here.
Hello. It is Newsday Tuesday.
Whoa.
Uh-oh.
Look at this.
I said that last time. You guys had the same reaction.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Don't remember. Well, sometimes it takes, you got to say things. Sometimes you got to say things twice for it to stick, right?
Right.
I mean, that's repetition. That's what
exactly.
They say. You got to say it over and over again.
Although I am happy that
Newsday Tuesday,
right?
I
got to amaze you twice in a row.
Can't believe. Now I'm starting to feel like I said this exact same thing last mm-hmm. week, where I said I can't believe that we haven't ever contemplated that before.
I think that's exactly what happened. Yeah.
I'm starting to suspect that Hump Day wasn't new either.
Interesting. I feel like my memory is so bad that I'm having the exact same thing play out now. It's only a week apart.
It's okay. Matt had the same reaction, so you're not alone.
Maybe it's something in the water cooler.
Uh oh.
We got to clean that thing.
Maybe something in the CBD.
We got all the printouts of the stats of the CBD. If there was anything in there, we'd know about it.
We would know about it.
Yes.
Let's get right to it. DeSantis, in prepping for his run for president, it may or may not be contingent upon Donald Trump being alive or being of, well, I'm going to say a sound mind. But here is – now, look. I don't even know if there's a subtext here. And – for a long time, we heard, I mean, years ago, people would say, like, you know, it's not over. I mean, who was it that had the, he wrote a book. We had him on. He has a show on Sirius. Michael Signorelli, I think it is, wrote a book saying it's not over or something to that effect, suggesting that despite the fact the Supreme Court found that it was a constitutional protection for people who wanted to marry someone of the same sex, that they could do so in this country, and that it had been sort of like settled law, and that the Republican Party had moved on. And they did, on some level, they moved on to being the party of transphobia. But the idea that homophobia as a political instrument in the Republican Party had gone away, if you were under that belief, understand now it was a mistaken one.
Yeah. It is their new transphobia, not new, but their embrace of transphobia is just a way for them to launder their latent or, you know, quieter homophobia that they put on the back burner.
Which is now they're starting to turn the volume up.
Yeah.
And we're going to see a Supreme Court that is going to, I am quite convinced, inhibit that right for gay people to get married in some form or another. Or they're going to allow states to abridge it. We're going to say, basically see, and they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade or, you know, in some ways they've effectively already done that. We're going to see the same sort of MO with gay marriage and rights for gay people in this country. And this is a sign of things to come. You start with a law. And who knows exactly how this law will be put into practice, if we will see teachers fired for saying to their third grade students, I'm married to a man. If they're a man, I'm married to a woman if I'm a woman. We'll see about that. But what it really is meant to do is to signal to parents, to people in Florida and around the country, that the problem is gay people are grooming our children. They are predators. That's what this is meant and designed to do. That's why it's protecting our children. We're protecting them from what exactly? From hearing about people being gay?
Well, because that might turn them gay or trans.
This is the point. This is the point. We are going back. The future is taking us back to the past where gay people are predators.
That there's even people in Hollywood that are opposed, you know, to providing protections for parents and enforcing parents' rights. You know, the one thing I'll say about that is if the people who held up degenerates like Harvey Weinstein up as exemplars and as heroes and as all that, if those are the types of people that are opposing us on parents' rights, I wear that like a badge of honor.
And so now the idea is that these people protect predators and sexual assaulters and rapists.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't. And that's what this legislation is about. They are looking to basically reinvigorate, to the extent that it had gone away, but to sort of reintroduce it to the public, the idea that gay people are predators.
And the Harvey Weinstein thing is not very subtle. I mean, they even though I just looked it up, some photos of Trump and Harvey Weinstein standing next to each other, same with Jeffrey Epstein, they're all, you know, swimming in the same pool there. But this is a way to tag regular teachers, regular queer, trans, whatever, gay teachers in Florida with the tag of sexual predator. And it works nicely for the base that they want to cultivate.
Indeed. So, you know, keep your eye on this because this is where things are heading. This was 2004, it was a big driver of Republican voting. It's how George W. Bush got a lot of those religious fundamentalist who sat on the sideline in 2000, which is why he did not win the popular vote in 2000. And he got them reactivated by fighting gay marriage. They put a gay marriage constitutional amendments, I think it was in 6 or 7 states around the country in 2004.
So when they say protect the children too, what they mean is protect the children from any outside view that is not my own about how they should be. Because children are not human beings that should be respected by their parents. No, they should be little vehicles of our own narcissism and fear about the rest of the world. And if they are not made in our exact image, then there's a huge problem. And we need to stifle that out in any way that we can.
I actually think when they're saying protect our children, they are the real message they're getting is that we're going to protect them from being indoctrinated and turned gay. And maybe even
that's not in my image of what I want my child to be. I want my child to be a good straight Christian. I mean, that's what it is too. And then also, but that's how they assign morality to their position of trying to stifle their child's individuality, is that there's something really inherently wrong with it as well, or that they're being abused to end up turning out that way. That's what they don't want. They don't want their children to deviate from the norm.
Of course not. But they also want to propagate the myth that one can be groomed into a gay lifestyle by your teacher.
Right.
And that is like the sort of archetype that they have developed, that the gay predator. This is, you know, they're pulling this one, forgive the pun, out of the closet and taking it out for a spin.
And you notice, like, of course, the attack on gay people is central, just like the attack on, like, say, non-white people is to the CRT stuff. But both of those issues, attacking public schools and disciplining teachers.
Yeah, it's a real, like, I don't know, fourfer.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's more than a twofer. Sorry, the final point too, stifling your child's like individuality and their sexuality and who they are as human beings, that's the real abuse. That's the real abuse.
Yes, and leaving them unprepared to like understand what is unwanted sexual advance is also preparing them for abuse.
Mm-hmm. Right. Word from our sponsor. You know, just as an aside, we used to have a sponsor who sold betting. I appreciated the betting. I did. Their business practices were no good, you know, from a political standpoint, from our perspective, that they had a factory in the Palestinian West Bank. And so we dropped them. Since that time, we have fielded a couple of offers to advertise for betting. And it took a while to find some that I liked and that I thought were good. And also, I like the fact that these are sustainable. Sheets are important. You want them to be comfortable. Cozy Earth provides the softest, most luxurious, and best temperature regulating sheets. For me, I want them to be comfortable. Everybody knows I like that sort of like cool, crisp feel of the sheets. The temperature control is key because I run hot, ladies and gentlemen.
Me too.
And I think people know that about me. Cozy Earth has been featured on Oprah's Most Favorite Things list for 4 years in a row. I have no idea what the other things are on there. But I trust,
I don't know either.
I trust
but...
me. They are made from super soft viscose, which comes from bamboo. Cozy Earth sheets breathe, so you sleep at night with the perfect temperature all year round. They have thousands of 5-star reviews. They have become the bedding of choice for interior designers and celebrities like myself.
I've been getting ads for them on Instagram, and I was just perusing it. And
that's weird.
Yeah, I put it in a note because I liked some of the sweatshirts that they have. They also seem to have loungewear and things like that. Yeah.
Yes. They have a 100-night sleep trial. for their sheets. This is one of the other awesome things about this. 100 nights to sleep on it. You can wash it. You could try it out. If you're not completely in love, after 100 nights, you send it back for a full refund. There's no risk associated with this, folks. There's a 10-year warranty. They come in 4 new colors. They honestly, hot and cool. We've had a huge mix over the past, like I would say, month of nights.
Yeah.
And particularly in my building, they don't turn off the heat.
Yeah.
If it's even like 50, 60 degrees out.
I'm going to get one of these comforters because my comforter's too warm and I have to, every night I keep the window cracked even when it's like 40 degrees out.
All right. So check this out. For a limited time, you can save 35% on Cozy Earth bedding. Go to.
I'm actually on the website right now.
Go to cozyearth.com/majority. Enter my special promo code majority at checkout. You save 35% now. That's cozyearth.com/majority. Be sure to enter majority at checkout for 35% off. Okay, let's get back into it. Mentioned this up front. We shall see. You know, there's Russia has said that they are vowing not to attack northern Ukraine. The idea is that it's a show of faith as they enter into more serious ceasefire negotiations in Istanbul. Supposedly, this according to the Financial Times, Russia is no longer requesting that Ukraine be denazified. They are prepared to let Kyiv join the European Union if it remains a military non-aligned, essentially neutral. Zelensky has already said that they would be neutral. The real question is going to be, I think, over the Donbas. I think we mentioned yesterday that it looked like, as Russia was turning its attention to the east, that they may want to, that Russia may want to annex the Donbas in some way as a way of saying that this was what it was all about from the get-go. As part of the agreement under consideration, according to the Financial Times, Ukraine would also refrain from developing nuclear weapons or hosting foreign military bases in addition to abandoning NATO membership. However, Ukraine would get what they are calling at the moment wording that is close to NATO's Article 5, which basically says that alliance members can rely on, if one of them is attacked, security guarantees from other members of NATO. So they are looking for some type of, if we are invaded, we can get some type of security guarantees from them. I don't know what the functional difference is, frankly, between that and admission into NATO, but maybe because they're not part of a pact, it becomes less enforceable. I just don't know. But we will see. And of course, this all needs to be ratified by parliaments, et cetera, so we will see. Russia is demanding that Ukraine, or supposedly is demanding that Ukraine recognize Russia's control over the Crimean Peninsula, which was annexed by Russia in 2014, according to them, and the territories run by Russian-backed separatists in the eastern Donbas region, as they said. So apparently Ukraine is also prepared to discuss some humanitarian issues, such as restoring Crimea's water supply and pledging never to try to take the peninsula by force. So we'll see. There's starting to be like broad outlines of maybe how this thing ends.
And it's going to be painful. I mean, it's going to be a painful, compromise for Zelensky and for Ukraine. But the primary objective is for the fighting to stop and for death to stop.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I sort of at this point, I don't know. I'm sort of agnostic as to, you know, what Ukraine should or should not do in terms of accepting which terms are not. And but whatever brings about a cessation of the killing of civilians, in my estimation, is best. So we'll see. We will keep you updated there. And just, you know, I guess it's worth saying there are some people who are skeptical of the whole thing and think that maybe this is an attempt by Russia to bide some time so they can reinforce their troops and spell them for a while, because Ukraine, by all accounts, is on offense, at least in terms of on the ground at this point. And, but I mean, who knows? It's very difficult to assess these things, as we talked about with Jack Crosby at the show,
on Saturday.
We had a lot of guests at that show. We're not going to do a show like that again. Maybe in Brooklyn, it's worth doing, like a show where we have 47 guests.
Yeah.
But that can't happen in other places. It wasn't really 47.
The issue also was that we went like an hour with our first guest.
There's a lot of substance in that show.
There was a lot of substance in that show, and a lot of comedy.
And substances.
That's true. People have asked, are we going to release it? And at this point, I don't know that we're going to release it in full. Obviously, it's released to the people who purchased the streaming links, and they can still see it with that link, right? That link should still send them that, right? That they got originally. And we may take segments of it and put segments of it up on our YouTube over time. We may release the whole show, and certainly we're releasing it for members. That's what we're going to be doing. So if you really want to see it and you've been thinking about becoming a member, head to jointhemajorityreport.com, become a member, and you will see that soon enough. And if you join as a member, of course, you always have the opportunity to go back and watch shows that we've done for 10 years. 12 years. Friday is what, April 1st? Thursday, I won't be here, we'll mark 18 years I've been doing this.
Wow.
Jesus, mother effing Christ. Yeah. It's exhausting. I'm already exhausted.
20 years is going to be, it's going to be a hell of a milestone. It's a long time.
Yeah, it is. It's like in my second career too. Jeez. Just a couple of COVID notes. Coronavirus deaths down below 800. I think it was something like 736, but that's a 14-day tally, 14-day average, I believe. And
I've
so
got 753 deaths yesterday.
Oh, was that yesterday, or is that the 14-day? That's the daily average. And I don't know if that's over the course of the last 7 days, maybe. And so we're under 800 for the first time since last summer. And hopefully that continues to drop. The FDA just announced that people over the age of 50 are now eligible for their second booster.
Charge.
You charge.
And I am headed there. I almost went and got one the other day without having the FDA approval. I was just going to sign up and go in and say, I don't have my card. But now I don't have to do that.
Yeah, I was a bit more conscious of it because of the fact that we were around so many people on Saturday. I was like, I hope I can get a booster suit.
Someone's just asking on the IM, Lori from SC, can we still buy a streaming link for the live show? Yeah, maybe we'll work out something like that where you can buy a link to see it if you're not a member or something like that. We'll figure that out. All right, let's take a look at Joe Biden's budget proposal. This is just a budget proposal. It gets negotiated, obviously, as it goes to Congress. But one of the more disturbing aspects of it, as you'll recall, Congress on the last budget increased the defense budget from what Joe Biden asked for by like something like $30 billion, if I remember correctly.
No, it, you know what that kind of the way that it operates is like the Pentagon will ask for something, either Congress or the president will then give them more. And then, you know, whatever, in this case, Congress is giving more to the Pentagon than even Biden asked for. It's like, no, I love you more. I love you more. And continuing to up it, it's just, it's like silly. It's, I mean, it, one, it's dangerous, but two, it's a way to just show fealty to, for lack of a better phrase, the deep state.
It's sick.
It's sick.
Well, it's, I mean, it is, it's simply the military industrial complex. I mean, this is, it's pretty straightforward. There's a lot of money to be made. A lot of these House members have bases or weapons manufacturing happening in their district. And but Joe Biden, his budget boosts spending by 7% domestically, 10%. Now that is good. I mean, it should be more. It's nothing compared to what the Build Back Better was supposed to be. And that is all but like become vaporware. It provides some funding for affordable housing, anti-gun violence initiatives, manufacturing investments, 7%, still rather anemic, 10% boost for the Pentagon, which is just, I mean, it's just insane. It's just insane.
10% more defended.
From what?
I feel 10% safer.
From what is it that we're supposed to be defended from it?
Just compared to how we were defended last year.
But even then, I mean, honestly, it's just insanity. The irony is that the deficit has gone down by over $1 trillion under Biden. This is a function, of course, of, you know, the 2020 economy just sort of crashed. And so revenues, you know, dipped dramatically, increased our deficit. We spent, then 2021, it comes roaring back. 2022 comes roaring back. Tax revenues go back up. And so that's where we're at. This is what's interesting. His proposal also includes a tax increase on American households worth more than $100 million. Now, this is a little bit different than we've had in the past, and this is actually going to be an interesting fight to see if we can get this through. This is a wealth tax and a rise in income tax. But it is based upon existing wealth mm-hmm. that you have. So the tax will require American households worth more than $100 million to pay a rate of at least 20% on their income, regardless of what the income is from. This is a minimum, alternate minimum tax.
And it would affect
families this wealthy. I mean, this is what's also bizarre. Families this wealthy avoid taxes to the extent that a 20% tax rate would capture a lot more money than it is now. And the idea that they're not even paying 20% on their taxes on their income is just insane.
Yeah. That's 20,000 families in the United States, the top 1/100th or the top 1/100th of 1% of U.S. households.
It will also tax their unrealized gain in the value of their liquid assets, which as far as I can tell right now are just our stocks and bonds. There may be some other ones. So it's not necessarily a home, but stocks and bonds. So if you own a stock. Let's just say I own Amazon. I do not, but let's say I did. And let's say I had $100 million worth of assets, including my house and my yacht and my, you know, 401k. If I'm Mitt Romney, my IRA, which I somehow managed to sneak in, you know, shares of Bain Capital, and it grows extensively, or wherever it was.
Hey, get in early.
If I have some Amazon stock and it has risen, let's just say for the sake of argument, it's doubled. It went from 100 to 200. I know these aren't the numbers for Amazon stock. I don't know what they are off the top of my head, but I also can't do the math if it's complicated. So if they've gone up from 100 to 200, you then would get assessed a 20% tax on that second 100. So you would pay $20 on that second 100. Anything that is gained, even if you haven't sold the stock yet and taken it off the table and put it in your pocket, that's the way it's been working now. You're subject to capital gains tax after you sell the stock. In this instance, it would be unrealized gains. Gains that are there on paper that you have not yet taken off the table. You're still gambling. It's basically saying we're going to take a chunk of it.
And these kinds of wealthy people have the ability to weather markets ups and downs, keep that kind of money in stock portfolios like that. And just it can be there indefinitely and continue to gain and gain and gain without necessarily being taxed. Right.
On top of which, it also functions as a way for them to get as collateral, for them to get other money that they don't get taxed on. So this is like the dirty little secret of being this wealthy that I only have like the broad contours of, to be frank. If I've got $10 million in the stock market with some investment brokerage firm, I can get almost a 0% loan from them to, let's say, buy a house and basically get free money for them because they're getting fees or, mm-hmm. you know, they're using this other money for collateral. Now, none of this is taxable in this instance. I'm going to get this money to buy this house, this $5 million house, this $3 million house. The money's not going to cost me anything in terms of interest. The house is going to accrue in value. So I'm making money off of money that I'm not paying for.
Right.
And none of what's going on here is taxable whatsoever. And so in terms of...
So you're saying you can... So if you have a healthy or large portfolio with JP Morgan, you can turn around and use that portfolio as collateral for, like, in the real estate.
I'm not even sure it's actually literally legally collateral. It's just that if you maintain
there's
an account
an understanding.
With us, if you maintain an account with us with $5 million in our brokerage services, we're going to give you a 0% loan for your $3 or $4 million house that you're going to buy.
It's a perk.
And that house accrues in value. You pay nothing on that money that you've borrowed. It's basically you're renting, but you own it. You have all the equity associated with that, except for the money that you borrowed. But you're getting free money and using that free money to make other money. And so the problem is we have incredible wealth inequality in this country. Both income and wealth inequality in this country. And we need to diminish it. Frankly, 20%, good start. As far as I'm concerned, take it up to about 85%.
If this goes anywhere.
If this goes anywhere, yes. Yes.
Huge
if. Of course, of course.
We're going to get to Manchin later in the show, but...
of course. Those paying already more than 20% would not owe any additional taxes. That's that is in terms of the billionaire minimum income tax. So we'll see. But what's interesting is they are already beginning to attack this concept of taxing wealth. And here's what you're going to hear over and over again. There's no way for the U.S. government to tax wealth. That never, ever, ever happens. And how do you know that's true? Well, CBS has hired an expert on this to tell us that. His name is Mick Mulvaney. You may remember this name.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
He was one of the lead members of the Tea Partiers and the Freedom Caucus in Congress, one of the most bat-crap conservative people in Congress until he became the chief of staff for Donald Trump. The man is, let me put it this way. When it comes to taxation or regulation or a whole host of things, you cannot get a more ideologically biased person than this. He was also OMB director underneath Donald Trump. You cannot get a more ideological spokesperson against taxation than Mick Mulvaney. See if you can divine that from this CBS News.
And I should say there's a thread by Matt Negrin I think MSNBC, yeah. And he's going through how CBS has basically only had Republicans on their Sunday shows on Meet the Press and how they've been hiring a bunch of Trump officials and just calling them contributors, stacking the deck. So there's something going on here with the way CBS is trying to frame
CBS these would be Face the Nation, but yeah.
Yeah, and also be clear here. We can talk about Fox News.
Oh, did I say cable Meet the Press? News? Face the Nation, sorry.
We can talk about cable news all we want. CBS still goes to millions of people. When you watch CBS News, the last thing you're thinking is this is ideological. See if you see one clue as to who this guy is other than just generic OMB, Office of Budget Management head.
President Biden has announced a $5.8 trillion budget proposal for the 2023 fiscal year, which includes a wealth tax for the richest people in the country. Households with assets of more than $100 million would face a minimum tax of 20%. So here to discuss is Mick Mulvaney. He's a former Office of Management and Budget Director. And today I am pleased to welcome him as a CBS News contributor. So happy to have you here. Thank you so much. You're the guy to ask about this. So we learned yesterday that
Pause it. First off, I mean, just think about how glib 20% minimum tax on $100 million. You could just stop right there if you're saying this on national news and just go like, isn't that insane that we don't already have a minimum of 20% tax on people who have assets over $100 million?
Right.
That's insane. That would be like you could just go off for a half an hour on that. This is to put Mick Mulvaney up there. The only thing equivalent would be to bring on, someone from Code Pink to talk about the increase in the military budget without mentioning that they were with Code Pink. I mean, I'm just trying to think of like something like there is no. I don't know that there is a figure, I'm not talking about like a Kudlow, like this guy of all the people in terms of cutting taxes.
Yeah.
Mick Mulvaney. And he's the guy to talk to assess this massive, massive income disparity, this proposal to address wealth.
And I just want to quickly correct myself. The guy that I cited earlier is joking when he says he's from MSNBC. He's a different reporter, but keep going.
It's a language of wonkery. Like, we got the best wonk in D.C. to talk about this. He's a former bureaucrat, right. Mick Mulvaney.
Right, and completely ignoring the fact that he's actually one of the – first of all, he was a horrible horrible on the wonkery side, really only – And the idea, you don't even say it's former Trump OMB director. It's just insane. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yep.
And today I am pleased to welcome him as a CBS News contributor. So happy to have you here. Thank you so much. You're the guy to ask about this. So we learned yesterday that some of the plan is, the proposal is to tax some of the richest Americans in this country in a way that they have not been taxed before. Can you sort of explain the proposal for us and how it would work?
Yeah, really simple. Keep in mind that the proposal is just that. There won't be a lot of details to it because this is a budget document. But the rough idea is this, is that somehow the government will identify households that are worth more than $100 million, and that somehow those folks will be taxed so that they pay at least 20% tax. It's unclear if that's tax on income or wealth. It really is a very different way of measuring wealth in this country, Emory. We've never taxed wealth before. We've taxed income. In fact,
pause it. You know, this somehow is so mysterious. How are we going to do this? And he's going on to say that we've never taxed wealth before. We've never taxed property. What he doesn't mention is we have also something called property taxes. And what do property taxes do? They tax wealth in the form of the wealth that is associated with your house. How much is your house worth? But how could we possibly measure when this grows? How could we possibly measure it if it's not being sold? They do it every year. There's someone called the tax assessor mm-hmm. who comes in and assesses the value of your house for taxation purposes.
It happens
every single year.
Yeah, what universe is Mick Mulvaney living in? Maybe it's Florida there. I see that's where he's zooming in from, where your taxes are going up exponentially.
They have property taxes.
Exponentially. No, but I know, but like maybe it's a little bit lower in terms of like a lot of people with big houses right now or wealthier people, their property taxes were going up, have been going up every year, basically, especially, I guess, in blue states after the,
I imagine there's property taxes in Florida have gone up too on some. There's no income tax down there.
Yeah.
But we do this all the time.
Yeah. And if there's a reason we haven't got around to taxing wealth like this before, it's because wealthy people have controlled the electoral system
without
the entirety of the nation's history.
Wealthy people like Mick Mulvaney.
How do you assess the value of a stock? Well, it's quite easy, actually, because there's a number associated with that. So when we say the stocks went up, it's because the numbers associated with that stock went up.
That's too convoluted. You shouldn't even try.
So it's not like somehow. This is not like magical. We just make a decision. And the way that we're going to do it is you're going to have to declare what's the value of your stocks on December 31st. If you have a 401k, it's over a certain amount. I think with the IRA, you've got to declare that with the U.S. government. It's just a file, a form. You have a form you file. This is not rocket science. We can figure it out.
And the distinction, just really quickly, between we've never taxed wealth before in this country. We've never essentially punished people for being wealthy. He's not going to say that right now because he's trying to launder himself as like a neutral expert. But it's so silly because the reason that we're in a position that we have to tax wealth in this country is because we have slashed all other methods of taxation so aggressively to the point that now it is a complete fundamental need, and we're in late stage capitalism, and that's what needs to happen now. But like, you know, to talk about it as unprecedented, no, it's a way to claw back from the position that of extreme wealth inequality that we've gotten to from slashing income tax rates and, you know, other taxes as well.
And before someone sends me a capital flight, I think Bernie Sanders had a good suggestion to deal with capital flight. There's an exit fee. If you want to leave the United States on good terms, obviously you can flee the United States. You can put all your money in a Swiss bank or, you know, the Cayman Islands or whatever it is, and you can flee the United States. But if you want to leave on good terms, you want to come back, you want to visit your companies, you want to visit your kids, you want to visit your relatives, you want to visit, you know, your ski chalet in Vail or wherever it is, you got to pay an exit fee.
Oh. It'd be so awesome.
All right, go back a little bit. Let's listen to him. Mick Mulvaney now being completely laundered as some type of like just voice of technocracy.
He's the Bill Nye of accounting.
He's the Bill Nye of accounting. And here he is. He's just going to, like, I don't know how we're going to do this. Is it going to be like magic? Like, somehow we're going to do this. Whoa, it's like alchemy.
The government will identify households that are worth more than $100 million, and that somehow those folks will be taxed so that they pay at least 20% tax. It's unclear if that's tax on income or wealth. It really is a very different way of measuring wealth in this country, Emory. We've never taxed wealth before. We've taxed income. In fact, the Constitution might not even allow a property tax. It does specifically allow an income tax. But that's the basic framework. We'll find out how much money you've got on things like unrealized stock gains, businesses that you might own. And even though you didn't make money off of that last year, we're still going to tax you on it. That's the basis of the proposal.
Even though you didn't make money on it, you made money on it. This is the lie, that you haven't made money unless you realize those gains, so-called realize those gains. But again, having that money in that form allows you to get other money for free. And so this is the way wealthy people live. They take the existing money they have. They leverage that to get zero cost loans. They invest those zero cost loans in assets that will increase in value. They use that to also pay for things. And as far as the government is concerned, they don't even have any income. They don't have any income. We need to tax away, in my mind, 20% is, like I say, it's a start. Let's get the door open so that we can show that we can do this. And then let's work our way up to about, 80, 90%.
Man, it's so insidious the way he says, it might not even be allowed by the Constitution. We'll have to wait for what the Constitution says, as if the Constitution is going to start talking to us.
Well, it really is just a question of like, will Clarence Thomas...
Exactly, it's the Supreme Court.
You know, exactly. And the Supreme Court, you know, who knows what the Supreme Court's going to do? The Supreme Court, I would imagine, would strike this down. Oh. Because they don't want it to exist.
Yes, that's why they're there.
That's why they're there. That's why they're there.
Listen to the Constitution, like put a stethoscope up.
Right. I mean, it'll...
Two cups and a string, we could talk to the Founding Fathers from beyond the grave. If they would have any concept of like the amount of the breadth of our passive income streams here in this country for the wealthiest people.
Yeah, but they would probably side with the Republicans.
Fine. Fair enough. But like, the, you know, it's just, it's a silly premise on its face.
I mean, who knows whether this would ever even pass the Senate, frankly, but it's possible. You only need 50 votes. This would be done under reconciliation. But of course, Joe Manchin. And speaking of Joe Manchin, I want to just go through some of the highlights of this article. Yeah. I know I mentioned it yesterday. This is really important for people to understand.
Good on the New York Times for doing this, even though, again, as you said yesterday, the political reporters will pretend it never happened.
Exactly. It'll still be Joe Manchin's concerned about the deficit. Joe Manchin's concerned about inflation. Joe Manchin doesn't want to see a lot of money spent on, electric charging stations or anything. You know, this is
because it's for the good of the country in his eyes. We may have a disagreement, Sam.
And back in the day, libertarians would say, we need to decentralize because there's too much corruption. There's too much corruption in the federal government, and we need to have smaller. We need to put more hands in the states. Huh. This is a perfect example of how much more corrupt governments are the more local you get them. Because the people who run, not all of them, I don't know about the majority even, you know, Gustavo Rivera, state senator from Bronx, who was on the live show we did, really broke it down into sort of like, types of people who are in the Senate. One cohort of people in the Senate, state Senate, could be assembly, whatever it is. One cohort of people in local politics see politics as simply an extension of their business interests. Period. End of story. They don't perceive it as that being corrupt or whatnot. It is just like
all they know.
Why do I join the United Way? Why do I sit on the board of the United Way? Because I want to network so that I can meet other people and also feel like I'm doing good, whatever it is. Good. Good on you for doing something like that. Why do I become state senator? I become state senator because it's going to allow me to run my business. In Joe Manchin's case, it's going to allow him to found essentially a business. Joe Manchin became a state senator in 1987. It was a part-time job with a base pay of $6,500. His family's carpet business.
Well, yeah, and they do that just to say, so like you need an outside source of revenue in order to be to serve in these positions.
I would love to see. I mean, there's no email back then, but I would imagine if that was in present day, the amount of like work emails that he would send were over under set at 10 and a half.
His family's carpet business was struggling. And at that time, there was a business, Granttown Power Plant, that was just looking to be built. Some developers wanted to build this in Granttown. That is a place in West Virginia, just south of Pennsylvania. And Manchin ended up helping these developers build this. He went into business with Granttown. Manchin made sure that they could get a permit to build their power plant, even though it was close to another power plant, because the local, you know, the state EPA essentially worries that we concentration of all the stuff that we burn here could be bad for people. He managed to get them a waiver. And this is just nuts. What ended up happening is right around that time, and I think in part with a loan from the Granttown power plant people, he started a business. He bought a couple of mines and supplied the Granttown power plant with a type of low-grade coal that they call gob, which means like, I don't know, garbage of bituminous. Literally, garbage of bituminous. It's waste coal. And so he provided this gob.
You're basically burning trash or junk from coal to get junk extra. Coal. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Junk coal.
Yeah. Junk coal to get extra electricity.
Exactly. And his business has been the, or I should say, Granttown Power Plant has been the sole customer for his business for 20 years. The sole customer.
And what's that office like?
He urged the state official to approve its air pollution permit. That's the first thing. He pushed fellow lawmakers to support a tax credit that helped the plant. Worked behind the scenes to facilitate a rate increase that drove up revenue for the plant, because when they started, all of their projections of what it was going to cost to produce this energy were lower than it ultimately became because they bought garbage of bituminous instead of the higher grade coal. So it was more expensive to generate energy. So not only is Manchin making all of his millions of dollars by selling this garbage coal to this power plant, helping them overcome all of the hurdles that would have killed a different plant, it's actually costing the ratepayers, his constituents, more money to subsidize the use of his garbage that they're burning.
Even though it's cheaper for Granttown.
Well, it's not necessarily cheaper for Granttown. No.
Oh.
That's the thing. It costs them more money to turn that into power.
Okay.
Because it's such garbage, but they can pass that along once they get approval from the West Virginia government to their ratepayers.
Okay, gotcha.
They don't have to justify, why are we burning a bog? We don't have to justify that. Well, we're burning bog because that's what Joe Manchin was supplying us. And Joe Manchin's the guy who's making it possible for us to set up the plant in the first place.
Burning gob.
Records show that several energy companies have held ownership stakes in the power plant, among them major corporations with interests far beyond West Virginia. At various points, those corporations have sought to influence the Senate, the U.S. Senate, including legislation before committees on which Joe Manchin sat, creating what ethics experts describe as a conflict of interest.
No.
Yep. So, as the Grant Power Plant continues to burn coal and pay dividends to Mr. Manchin, it has harmed West Virginians economically, costing them hundreds of millions of dollars in excess electricity fees because GOB is less efficient power source than regular coal. This is just, it's just the multiple ways that Joe Manchin is literally screwing his constituents is mind-boggling. This account from the New York Times, based on thousands of pages of documents from lawsuits, land records, state regulatory hearings, lobbying, financial disclosures, federal energy data, and other records spanning more than three decades. The documents and interviews show that at every level of Mr. Manchin's political career, from state lawmaker to U.S. senator, his official actions have benefited his financial interest into the Granttown plant, blurring the line between public business and private gain. They own, he and his wife, assets between $4.5 and $12.8 million as of 2020. That's according to Senate financial disclosure. That's a pretty wide gulf there. That's a bigger gap than my two kids. Enner Systems is now run by Joe Manchin's son. In 2020, it paid Mr. Manchin almost $500,000, according to his filings, almost three times his salary as a United States senator. From 2010 to 2020, Manchin reported a total of $5.6 million from the company.
And I just wanted to look up before we move past that part, the gob coal or whatever, has four times more mercury than regular coal. Just so people understand, you know, what Manchin was doing here.
That and the permit that they got was probably didn't even take that into consideration. So what happened was in 1978, you had all the energy crisis. The Congress made it easier to open up plants that were going to burn standard coal, four times the mercury. The developers who planned the Granttown plant created a company called American Bitumen Power Partners, or AMBIT. It signed a contract with a local utility, Mongolia Power, to purchase the electricity it produced from GOB. So Manchin is a state senator. After helping win the permit for the plant, Manchin began to profit from it. On October 5th, 1989, one of Manchin's companies, Transcon, bought an old coal mine in Barackville, 5 miles south of Granttown, for $380,000. It's unclear where he got that money. That same day, maybe he didn't even need the money, because that same day he sold the property and its gob piles to AMBIT for $500,000. You follow this?
Yeah.
If I go buy a piece of property, I say, here's the check. Before you have a chance to cash this check, I get another check for $380,000. Here's my check. I got another $500,000 that comes into my bank account. I got that $380,000 covered, and I just made $120,000. But not only did he sell that to Granttown, he also got a share of the revenue generated from it. He signed another deal with AMBIT that Manchin, involving another old coal mine that Manchin owned. He leased that mine along with the gob on that property to AMBIT. In return, AMBIT agreed to pay not just rent to Manchin, but also 1% of the gross revenue from electricity generated by burning gob from Manchin's old coal mine that he sold. That's the way you launder these deals. But you do two deals.
Yeah.
You have the terms from the second deal tied into the first deal, so the first deal doesn't look as bad. Once the Granttown plant opened, Mr. Manchin urged his fellow state lawmakers to back a tax credit for the power plants that burn gob because they're not getting as much out of that gob as the regular coal would be. Only three plants in the entire state burn gob. Granttown was one of them. As the Granttown plant continued to buy Manchin's gob, Manchin's political ambitions grew. He was elected Secretary of State. In 2000, 4 years later, he rode a landslide into the governor's mansion. From that position, he helped the power plant win an even more coveted prize. Shortly after the Granttown plant began burning gob, Ambit said the operating costs were higher than expected and the company was going to need more money for the electricity it was supplying to Manchin's constituents. Mm-hmm. So the gob he's selling to the plant was inefficient to burn for electricity, so it was going to cost the power plant more, so they needed to maintain their profits, so they needed to get their constituents to pay more money. The West Virginia Public Service Commission said, we're not doing that. We're not doing that.
Yeah.
Because, probably because the utility company, Mon Power, was like, we're not going to pass on this cost to our constituents. Well, in 2006, Manchin becomes governor. Ambit seeks the rate increase again. And Governor Manchin, who is literally making royalties on that money, agrees to it and pushes it through. This is like the idea that after this was published, the Department of Justice is not knocking on doors in West Virginia, that the FBI is not going in and raiding places.
Well, I mean, maybe it stopped. And then when he was elected to the U.S. Senate, then he was stopping, being one of the, quote, most vocal opponents to the EPA's proposed limits on emissions of mercury and other hazardous substances from power plants. The mercury regulations, which eventually took effect, were partially threatening to plants like Granttown because gob generates more mercury per kilowatt of electricity than traditional coal. So he took that pro-mercury emission fight to the federal government as well.
This guy, and we're not even talking about all the corruption that was involved with his family and putting his daughter at West Virginia State University, and
like making the university act like she had a qualification she didn't have so she could continue being a CEO of a pharma company that he helped land her at.
This is really just it's just amazing.
And to the extent when you have these small government libertarian types that genuinely believe that smaller is less corrupt, but when you have people with foundation or political connections say this stuff, it's pretty much just to protect guys like Joe Manchin.
Yep. Yep. You can buy them cheap. You can buy them cheap.
A lot cheaper, a lot less eyes on it.
Yep. And this guy's gotten away for it for decades. And here's the horror story of all of this. Joe Manchin had decided to retire. Republican would be representing West Virginia. And all the federal judiciary would be basically frozen. We would not have a seat on the Supreme Court. I mean, this is how effed up things are. And
it's a no-win situation.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is, you look for the Democrats to do a pickup or two in the Senate. I don't think it's going to happen.
Jeez.
But still like to see this guy go to jail. Like tomorrow.
Yeah. And it's just like also in terms of the way that the very thinly veiled way that you hide these business connections, like, he's disclosed these connections to the Senate in this official capacity. It's those disclosures are designed to be as like thin and as easily worked around as possible for guys like Joe Manchin. And that's why he's still in power.
Yep. Really stunning. And of course, you're the governor of the state. Who's going to come after you?
Yeah.
Who's there to come after you? All right. Let's bring Nomi in. Just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, you help the show survive and thrive. Don't forget, speaking of the big live show in Boston, May 15th, 2 p.m., go get your tickets now. I'm starting to think it could sell out. I just have that feeling now.
It's close.
So check it out. Also, AM Quickie, amquickie.com. You can hear from Jack and Corey every morning, top news stories of the day, and justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY and get 10% off. Nomi! Can we bring her in? 3, 2, 1, bingo! Whoa.
Hi, why am I so big?
Huh?
Do I have to move back? I'm so big.
Well,
do I have
go.
To do this?
We're all the same size.
Okay.
You can also zoom out.
Wait,
a little
I can
bit
do. I was slouching.
You can zoom out a little bit, Nomi, with your camera.
How do I? Oh, okay. Well, that's like extra technology that I have to be trained on.
We
come
can
on.
Adjust
okay.
it a little bit too.
We'll adjust it at the break.
Listen, I am okay with being the star of the show. Like, if you really want me to, it's okay. I'm down.
Just coming off your star turn on our live show in Brooklyn this weekend.
Yes.
You know, you made me a star, guys, just like that.
But so what's happening on your show this week?
So tonight we have Alex Vitale on, who we love having on to talk about just the never ending. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about bail reform in New York because that's a big story right now. There is an assemblywoman who is Latrice Walker, who's on her seventh day of a hunger strike because Kathy Hochul, the governor, is not playing well with all the lawmakers who really put a ton of energy into bail reform. So I think we're going to focus mostly on that. But of course, he's a great expert on the criminal justice system. And then tomorrow, that's on at 8 p.m. tonight on YouTube, and then moving over to Rockfin. And then tomorrow we are doing a Black Women Running for Office panel. There was an incredible event last night with in D.C. with a bunch of candidates that across the country running for Congress. And we're going to have a few on to discuss that event and their races. Ben Dixon's going to join us for Solidarity Wednesdays. And we're going to talk about, I think, pollution as well, you know, that other thing, with Ula Trabeck. And I think, you know, Dave Sirota had a great comment on the Will Smith, which was, I think, what I was thinking. I was like, why? And maybe it's just like people love getting distracted by this stuff. And there was like a deeper... Well, it was also, I mean, there's other stuff. It was a symbol of a lot of other toxic things that happened in our culture. But that was the takeaway from the Oscars. Not, you know, the world's on fire. We're in war. There's climate change. You know, Antarctica just like cracked off today. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah. Well,
that story.
Lost a huge ice sheet there. It's the Oscars. And at the end of the day, if you have to look at for the Oscars for any of that stuff that's going to be meaningful, it's not happening. But yes, point taken. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian media empire?
Well, yeah, speaking of David Sirota, we have Andrew Perez of the newly renamed The Lever, levernews.com, which used to be the Daily Post. So we're going to be talking about a couple stories about how pharma's got Kyrsten Sinema's back, how the Kochs are targeting the EPA. It's got a new story about an attack on Fetterman coming up from a Conor Lamb super PAC, and another story that's not out yet. So that will be tomorrow night. Patreon.com/LeftReckoning to get the post game. And yeah, we'll be live at 8 Eastern on YouTube. Oh, and we're about like 150 or so shy of 2,000 subscribers on YouTube. So you're going to want to go be one of those first
20,000.
I heard you're a Ukrainian.
Lever? That's a good question. The lever.
It's got to be lever.
I don't know why I say lever.
Maybe it's a North Dakota thing.
It might be a North Dakota thing.
Yeah. I think lever.
Lever. Okay.
Lever sounds like...
Like you're leaving.
Yeah. That would be weird.
That might be North Dakota.
Why did they change it?
See you in the fun half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow... What is that going on? It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second.
The Majority Report.
Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who?
What is up, everyone? Nomi Key.
You did it. Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this 7A?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello? Is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start like.
Libertarians.
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. 1/2. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop. You call it satire. Sam goes, satire.
On top of it all, my favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we seen you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick, so screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.